ancestor was a younger son of a Northumbrian local grandee in a squire. And instead of seeking his fortune, hadn't got any money, by going to India in the 18th century, like Clive or someone like that, he went to Russia. And they finally made good in shipbuilding. Catherine the Great was needed ships built, and they made good there. My mother came from what the Germans call a patrician family, which is not what the English call patrician. The patricians were the sort of urban aristocracy, you know, like the Medici in Florence, you know, mostly merchants.
So they were both pretty well born, weren't they, both sides of the family?
They were reasonably well born, yes.
What about your early schooling?
Well, I started that in Russia. And of course, I learnt Russian properly. I mean, we spoke Russian before anything else. And then we learnt German and English, so we grew up trilingual without the slightest trouble. Mm-hmm. Just as easily as you'd grow up one lingual.
And then a time came when your parents thought that it was time you were educated in England.
Yes, that was the thing to do. My father said, well, we remain British subjects. You've got to be British in one way.
So it was over to Tonbridge. I mean, how did you fit in there?
Well, you know, I just, like any boy, I fitted in, went through it, you know, in the usual way. But I got on very well.
The First World War came, and
yes.
You were trapped back at home, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, that's right, yes. Trapped, and we had a year there. And then we became impossible, you know, my brother and I, and my parents.
This was because it was dangerous to come back by sea,
yes.
I suppose.
Well, it was very dangerous, yes.
Yes. And you became rather bad, ill-behaved, did you?
Well, we didn't behave, we became ill-behaved. We obviously needed, kicking around a bit, like you do, after all, at that age, 15, 16, you know.
But it was during this rather unlikely period that you have what you describe as your first mystical experience. I mean, what was that like?
Well, it's very difficult to say. You see, I've never talked really about that anywhere. And I can only say that for some moments, well, some minutes perhaps, one felt as though the universe had come down about one's ears like a pack of bees, you know, the stars buzzing around one's ears, or that one was raised up into the universe. And I look back on it now as an extraordinary sort of foretaste of what I tried to get at in my book, you know, that we've got to expand our consciousness. Like a tremendous expansion of selfhood and wholeness. But it was so enormous that I thought, well, you must have a stomachache. You must have eaten something odd. It's only gradually that I realize now that that was when the Lord said, now look, you get on your toes. You'll have to, I'll give you a push one day. And it turned out like that to be.
When you were a teenager, what was your general kind of religious state all the way through? Were you a kind of formal Christian?
No, I wasn't. You see, the nearest church in Estonia was in St. Petersburg, 100-something miles away. And so that we just never went to church at all.
And then it was back to Tonbridge, and that's when the revolution came, and you realised that you'd lost everything, and
lost
your
everything.
Teachers told you that. This must have been a very anxious time for you.
Well, it was. I mean, you see, I heard nothing from my parents for about 18 months, not to mention any kind of cash or anything coming through, fees or anything like that being paid.
And they told you at the school that you're living here now completely under our charity.
In polite language, yes.
And your time at Sandhurst, was it a happy time?
I loved that. It was a very strict discipline. but I loved it. And I loved the army too. It was to me like almost like what I later on realized the church ought to be. Mm. There was a tremendous spirit of comradeship, you know. Mm. And I often felt, oh, these chaps are worth dying for and with, you know, that sort of feeling.
And then you were commissioned from Sandhurst, yeah, and off to Murmansk. I mean, what were conditions like there?
Well, the fighting wasn't anything like the Western Front in the sense of the Somme or anything like that. But it was a risky business because if you were captured, you were shot. There's no prisoners were taken because it was all within the Arctic Circle, in the jungle, really, you see.
Mm-hmm. And you volunteered for this?
Well, I volunteered, very much to my mother's disgust.
And you were, in fact, shot here in Murmansk, shot in the head.
I was left for dead. Everybody was panicking. They said, well, this chap's had it. They left me there. No time to pick anybody up or anything.
But you came too, just in time to see them,
yes,
running
that,
away.
That was the extraordinary thing. I came to, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a chap disappearing through the trees. And if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have known where to go because the Bolsheviks were only 40 yards away.
Mm. So you came to at the right time. The ammunition was faulty. The odds against that happening were pretty high.
The official version was that about 1 in 300,000 was a dud. So I got that one.
Two miracles, you reckon, yeah, there?
Well, I quote that later on they would like two miracles, yes. Extraordinary.
It's only later, looking back, that,
yes,
you see,
yes,
that as miraculous and maybe,
yes,
as foreordained, do,
yes,
you?
Yes, I do. I do, yes, very much. I mean, I realize that, like all of us, you know, that one's sent into this world with a job. Or rather, you choose your job, if you like, you know, before you become incarnate. And my job is what I've tried to do, very inadequately, but we've all got jobs.
And then from there it was back into the army, into India?
India, yes. And
happy times?
Oh, very happy, yes. Then I had a very good job in Germany, you know, intelligence job later on.
You had little interest in the church all the
none
way through your
all,
army?
None at all, absolutely none at all.
Mm. But you say you never lost your inherently religious view of life. What do you mean there?
Well, I felt all the time that there must be a sort of superpower controlling events, you know. I mean, I was never really became a secularist in any way, in the full sense, or a humanist either.
Mm. But it was nothing more than that it was some kind of power was,
yes,
there.
Yes, it was some kind of power.
And you were content to leave it at that?
I was content to leave it at that, yes.
Until you retired from the army, and then you began to think.
Well, when I retired, that's what I meant. I wanted to bring up, too, about the church's job. I began to wonder what on earth the purpose of existence is. You know, what are we here for? I mean, here we are, having a good or bad time, but what is the purpose of the whole thing? Mm. I could support myself by the... Well, us. I mean, my wife had cash as well, you see, more cash.
And it was really she who encouraged you to take up writing and thinking.
Yes, yes.
I mean, more and more emerges that as you look back over your life, there seems,
yes,
a pattern.
Absolute pattern. I mean, a very pronounced pattern. You know, extraordinary.
Mm. You've mentioned the commission. This
yes.
was Archbishop William Temple who
yes.
invited you to sit on
yes.
on the commission.
Yes.
The commission of evangelism, wasn't
yes,
it?
Right.
Now, why should he do that?
Well, he wanted someone as a kind of devil's advocate, you know, to ask awkward questions. He said, it's all right having all these people here who are all you know, church people, and a lot of them became bishops afterwards. We had five bishops on it. Well, he said, well, I must have somebody who's going to ask nasty questions.
This was a personal invitation from Archbishop Temple, wasn't
yes.
it, for you?
I wish to goodness I'd kept his letters. He wrote me a number of letters, and very good ones, you know, about mysticism and that sort of thing. I ought to have kept them, of course,
yes.
Because they were good, really good letters, you know, very sane and very much in relation to the church's condition and everything.
It was at this time of your work on the commission that you started to study the Bible seriously,
yes.
Something we hadn't done before.
No, I'd never read the Bible at all before.
Could you spell it out a bit more about what you felt that you had that you would like to share with them if only they'd listen?
Well, it was the mystical approach to life, and that is union with God, you see. I didn't feel, even then I felt that it was wrong to regard God as a kind of despot from whom you were ineffably far away. But that your aim of your life, the purpose of your existence, was to become united, was to become one, abide in me as I in you. And I kept on feeling that why don't they do anything about this? They've got it there. It's part of their literature and everything, the gospel. Mm. But they don't do anything about it.
And about this time, when you started to study the Bible seriously, you were involved in a group practicing contemplation.
Yes. I found this group. It had mostly English people in it, but it was run by the Hindu Swami. Mm-hmm. What appealed to me was, you see, I saw the mystical aspect of the Bible straight off. Long before I ever thought of ordination or anything, I never did think of it. It was sort of thrust upon me, really. Mm-hmm. I felt straight away, why didn't they do anything about this?
So when you got involved in the group on contemplation, yes, you say bells rang and you saw this is it.
Yes, this is it. Absolutely.
And you tied in the two, the Bible and, yes.
Yes, very much. Yes. And, of course, then later, it was much later that I joined the World Congress of Faith, and we had a group where we, like our groups in the fellowship, only they were all religions. And this Swami was one of the people, he was one of the conductors, myself as a Christian, by that time I was ordained, and a Burmese monk was the other, represented the Buddhists.
This was a kind of logical extension for you, do you see? I mean,
yes,
you've gone here to the use of other scriptures other than the Bible.
Yes. Well, you see, I felt straight away that Christianity as presented by the church today in all its denominations was a sort of very feeble shadow of what it really is. I mean, I felt very strongly, and still do, that everything the other people have got that's true is really part of true Christianity, you know.
There are those who would take issue with you over that.
Oh, yes.
There?
Well, only because they don't know what it means, really. You know, not that... It's like this. You can use one instrument to play the tune of a symphony, can't you? But if you want to enrich the theme, you've got to have other instruments playing different tunes. And the symphony comes out of that. It's still got the tune, but it's very much richer than it was with one instrument.
There's a harmony.
Yes. And I think that's what it is with the other great religions. They all fit in together. It's not the same thing. But they're just contributing to what I call real Christianity.
As you look back over your life now, do you see all these kind of strands coming to a focus?
Yes, very much
more
so.
Or less.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
What is that focus?
Well, it's union with God. I've got to go the way in some life that Jesus did.
You feel you have been very privileged in able to move this path?
No, not at all. It's what we're all made for. I mean, that's what we are. We're meant for that. We're made for that.
But things have contributed to where you are. I mean, I look back at the time when you lost all your inheritance.
Yeah. Well, it's a great, that is a privilege in a sense.
With hindsight now, I mean, can you say what is God's purpose for humanity?
Well, it is, the Church has said it all the time. It is to glorify God in the sense of expressing what he is in terms of flesh and blood.
How do you see the future now of the Fellowship of Contemplative Prayer?
Well, I think it will go on spreading gradually. People will make mistakes because we don't go around censoring anybody. If they make mistakes, well, we can only say, I hope they'll learn by it, you know. But you can't tell people this is heresy or wrong or anything like that. The only thing you can say is, if you depart from the dominical sayings, then you've lost the purpose of the fellowship, the theological purpose. You've got to get into God somehow. I mean, there's no other purpose in life. We've all got to become God-conscious. In the sense, not in the sense of conscious of God, but conscious as God is conscious, all conscious. Well, that's mysticism, simply and pure and simple. But it has this tremendous practical sort of urgency today. Unless people are going to become moved towards all consciousness, there's going to be the most unholy conflict all over the world. And you can see the whole thing boiling up now. If you look around, I shan't be there to see the worst of it. I mean, I hope to go off before long. My one regret is saying goodbye to, for the time being, to one's family and people you're in close contact with. But it's only temporary. I mean, you carry on. It just vanishes. There is no death.